It's the last week for NFL training camps. All over the league, players chasing down a dream are down to the last few days. But maybe it's harder in LA. After all, La La Land is America's dream factory. And after so much work, being this close to the marquee and not making the cast can be crushing.
Leave it to the fine writers at Hard Knocks to work in a Hollywood metaphor, Liev Schreiber's voice, and the naked truth of the NFL dream to start our final episode of Hard Knocks Los Angeles. Yeah, the NFL dream, like it is for so many who show up to Hollywood off a Greyhound bus from some small town from some other state, is nearly impossible, and it's one that so many have chased and yet so few have fulfilled. And yet, on Labor Day weekend, every year, a final roster of 53 men is put together on 32 NFL teams, and thousands of dreams are actually realized, while countless others are put to an end. For most cases, it's temporary, but for some, it's permanent, and that's the end of the road. That's the theme of this week's Hard Knocks finale. Doors bursting open and others being shut. I'm Peter Schrager, the host of the Hard Knocks podcast, and I can't wait to dig into all of it with you right here. We'll go micro. We're going to break down the storylines that drove this episode and the players we focused on, but we're also going to go big picture as we look at this incredibly different, incredibly challenging, and incredibly well-executed Hard Knocks season as a whole. NFL Films VP and Hard Knocks showrunner Ken Rogers joins me as our guest as we discuss the living document that this Hard Knocks season will serve as when 20 years from now someone asks, so wait a second, how'd they play sports during a global pandemic? And they point to Hard Knocks as a time capsule as to just how. But first, let's get to those rosters and all the dudes who we've been following for 5 hours this month who have been trying to make that final 53. We start off in SoFi Stadium where the Rams are having a scrimmage, and we get right to halftime where Clay Johnston, the rookie linebacker who says fudge instead of, well, you know what, and whose father happens to be buddies with Brett Favre, is sitting eating a prepackaged sandwich in the locker room. His linebackers coach, longtime McVay assistant Joe Barry, gives a little pep talk to his position group.
Bro, I didn't even see the lineman get up to me and I'm falling on my face. That was the worst play.
We'll go fast, we'll play ball, okay? We'll actually get some live tackling in, see if you fuckers can tackle, all right? You good? Okay, get your hands in here, all right? And remember, I told Derek this earlier, go out and have fun. Fly around, play ball, okay? Don't be a damn stress case. The mistakes that you made, they're on me. We'll clean them up tomorrow, okay? Just go have fun and play ball. Let's have a great second half, all right? Ballers on three. One, two, three, ballers.
Bro, I freaking love that guy.
Johnston goes on to tell his coach that he's fresher than a salad. Gotta love Clay Johnston. And he is a curious dude, and his case is a curious one. He was drafted, but it was in the 7th round, so he's no lock to make the team. But he's also not a long shot. Cornerback Dante Dion's situation is different. The Rams know Dante Dion. He's been with the squad for a few years now, but he is no lock either. He explains his predicament as he works out with his girlfriend in his driveway, which ends up being a rare moment where he's not cracking wise for the cameras this season.
You know, I feel like I'm an underdog every year I go into a season. I'm undersized. It's not natural. I mean, if you look at the history of the NFL, I don't think there's 10 to 15 guys that have ever weighed less than me or weighed what I weigh, you know? So being that right there alone, it just that underdog mindset and knowing you could go get it and accomplish and overcome adversity, gonna be the real deal.
Meanwhile, over on the Chargers side, we've got Darius Bradwell, the rookie running back who showed up to camp more than 10 pounds overweight, and Braden Fajoco, the big rookie out of LSU who's hoping to make the team as a defensive lineman. There are decisions to be made from both front offices, and those calls and those conversations start happening midway through the show. Juju Hughes, the Rams rookie with the toothpick always in his mouth, is thrilled to learn that, though he didn't make the team, he will be asked to join the practice squad. Dante Dion, or Double D, as they call him in Los Angeles, is released, but he gets an assurance that he'll be added back to the practice squad because, as Sean McVay puts it, they love him. But Clay Johnston, that rookie out of Baylor, his deal is a little bit different.
I ain't got the best news, man, but we're gonna have to release you, man. So if you could head back over here and you need a ride?
Clay Johnston, they said.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he was here earlier eating breakfast. And then he probably was like, okay, everybody, I guess they call people when I'm in. So now he's like about an hour and a half away.
Oh, no.
Wherever the hell he's at.
Are you serious?
So Johnston was at the facility in the morning. He assumed he must have made the team because no one called him to tell him otherwise, and he drove home 90 minutes from the facility. Well, he didn't make the team. Take a listen how this conversation goes.
Gonna release you, but
yeah.
Definitely want you back on practice squad.
Definitely.
If you don't get claimed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Dude, I'm just grateful for the opportunity.
Oh, no doubt.
That means...
You earned that.
That meant the world to me. Just
no, you earned that.
Someone bringing me in and just being able to go on the field and... I don't think I could express how thankful I am. Just
well, I could tell.
Yeah,
no doubt, no doubt. So what'll happen is we'll, and I'll let that way Sean can chat. But
yeah.
Everything will you won't be on waivers till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Everything. Everybody clears or doesn't clear.
Got it.
So Panthers, if they don't claim you.
No, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you never know.
Right. Yep. Your head coach in college is now head coach in the NFL. But if you clear, and you want to be a Ram.
Oh, heck yeah.
Then,
Hey. How you doing, man?
What's up, Coach? Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, man.
Seriously.
No, hey, it's... Well, you still... The opportunity isn't over, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's... And, you know, obviously, you got a nice way about yourself, man. And
yeah.
I know Coach Barry loves working with you. And
I love him.
You know, been watching and paying close attention. I can see how engaged and locked in you are in those periods with Coach Bono and Torrey. So, keep doing that. But, you know... You do everything that you don't have to have any regrets, which is a good thing.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, you got it, man.
We'll I'm totally at peace because of just how it went. I don't have to look over my shoulders and regret anything. I studied, did the best I could. I played my nuts off with the reps that they gave me and just wait now, see what happens.
Okay, so here's the details that I was waiting to see mentioned on the show in the first four episodes in regards to Clay Johnston. So his dad, who's Favre's buddy, he works for the Carolina Panthers as the director of player wellness. And Clay's college coach while he was at Baylor, Matt Rhule, is now the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. So the Rams end up drafting Clay Johnston in the 7th round. But when they release him, his deal is not like some of the others who get cut in the episode because there's a spot for him somewhere else. We know the Carolina Panthers would love to have him. His father works there. His college coach is now the head coach. And of course, they do come calling with a spot on the practice squad. To say the least, he's got some strong connections down there in Charlotte. As for the Chargers, their coach, he's actually been there. Anthony Lynn says it's two of the worst days of the year every year, and he knows because he too was once an undrafted free agent trying to make a team when he was a player. Darius Bradwell, the running back who did come to camp overweight but then shed those pounds over the course of a month, comes into the facility and gets the news that he is being released. But he is also being told that he's going to be added to the practice squad by general manager Tom Telesco. But it's the conversation he has with Coach Lynn that leaves me thinking that Anthony Lynn's got a real feel for this and can really relate to these players.
Hey, Coach, how you doing?
Fooling, Darius. What can I help you with? How can I help you become a better pro, a better running back?
I think I have, like, a lot of tools in the bag, and I need to learn how to unleash them.
In order for me to help you unleash those tools, I got to help you become a better professional.
Yes, sir.
Now, you came into this gig 20-plus pounds overweight, my man.
Yes, sir.
You know, we were talking about paying you a six-figure income, and you know, I can't race with that car.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to take care of your body.
Yes, sir.
And then you got to figure out what type of vehicle you are. You know, you are a F-150. Might be a 250, okay?
Okay.
But you ain't no Corvette. You ain't no Lambo. So stop trying to run like one.
Yes, sir.
Big man like you, you got to stop trying to make 15 cuts before you get to the line of scrimmage. That's not your game, brother. You and I are going to get together and we're going to watch tape, and we're going to study backs that you remind me of. So you start to get that vision of what it's going to take to be successful in this league.
That would help me a lot. If I understand my abilities and see it, I could take it and run with it.
Right. You didn't make the active roster, okay? And you should be disappointed because you came here to make the team. But all these coaches want to help you.
I appreciate it.
Are you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right, man, let's do this.
The big fella, Fajoco, suffers a similar fate. He's released, but he too is being brought back onto the practice squad. But then we get back to Clay Johnston. It's the climactic scene of the episode, and I guess the climactic scene of a season where there really wasn't much actual football being played. We're invested in Clay Johnston, so now he's got a decision to make. Here's a guy that we've been tracking for 5 weeks and have envisioned as part of the 2020 Los Angeles Rams roster. He's a nice kid for sure, and he loves football, and he says fudge, and he's uplifting, and he's that guy you want to have on your team. Does he stick with the team that gave him his first chance and drafted him in the 7th round? Or does he jump at the opportunity to join his father and his college coach and start everything all over again down in Charlotte? He ends up choosing the Panthers, and he goes with Dad. Here's the Zoom conversation he has with Pops.
Hey, Pops.
Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear, Pops.
It's good to see you, man. Who would have ever thought this would have happened?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. Happened pretty quickly too, all in like one day.
I can't wait to see you. You know,
I'm ready to see you too, Pops.
We've done this for 2 months, and heck, we ain't got bread on today, so we can't get as many laughs. But
that's
we'll
true.
Get to work, bud.
I'm ready to see you, Pops. I've missed you. Those 2 months felt like 2 years out in LA, but now I get to come home and see part of my family, and I love you.
Well, love you too, buddy. Get ready to go to work because you know what's going to be asked of you. You take care.
The roster decisions and how those conversations went with those fringe players were the bulk of episode 5, but I'd be kidding you if I said that's what the takeaway from this season of Hard Knocks was. As much as I appreciate Clay Johnston's internal struggle and decision between Carolina or Los Angeles' practice squad, these 5 episodes will be long remembered for things off the field and the way 2 different NFL franchises coped and adapted to those subjects. Coronavirus, open and honest social justice conversations, the lack of a preseason. All of these things made this year's Hard Knocks season unlike any we've ever seen before. It also made the flawless execution of these 5 episodes all the more remarkable. And that's why I wanted Ken Rogers as our guest today. Ken's a vice president at NFL Films and the showrunner of Hard Knocks. So much went into the planning of this season's Hard Knocks campaign, and there were so many questions and challenges that he and his crew faced not only beforehand, but during the actual production of the show, that the fact that they pulled it off is simply amazing. Think about all of the hurdles they had to overcome just to film a television show, and now think of the fact that they nailed it. Oh my gosh, it's done. And this is a true accomplishment. And I'm not being hyperbolic here. I think it's a true accomplishment in sports television that you guys pulled this docuseries off with pretty much, knock on wood, no major setbacks, no major issues with production, and truly still provided us the all access that Hard Knocks does during a global pandemic. Do you have a chance now that you've put the wraps on this thing to appreciate what was just accomplished by your team?
We're just starting to realize it. As you said, it's done, but the correct phrase might be we're done. And I don't mean we're done in terms of getting our work done. We're just mentally and physically and emotionally done, drained, completely soaked through with emotional sweat. It's been a long, long 5+ weeks for all of us, especially the people out in the field who have been quarantined and in a bubble with the teams. And to be honest, we thought things were going to be a lot worse. I personally was expecting to have to go through a lot of positive tests, whether it was on the team side for players, and have to cover that and figure out how to walk that line between, you know, showing that but showing it from a distance to stay safe and to keep our crews safe. And I, to be honest, expected that our crews at some point would be infected. And how do we rotate crews in and keep other crew members quarantined in hotels and safe, and make sure that they don't get worse and take care of them and get them medical care. I really expected that this was going to be 5 weeks of a lot of energy put towards medical. And it ended up that all of our energy went towards this great creative challenge. And in so many ways, I'm glad that that was where our energy went. I'm not sure we would have had enough energy to put towards medical emergencies. I think the creative of the show might have ended up suffering because we spent all we had on this really challenging creative. So the challenges were in a different phase than really I expected them to be.
Yeah. And again, knock on wood, pulled it off. And I think, you know, I do a show every morning. It's kind of fleeting. Like, no one's going to remember Good Morning Football from August 13th. I don't remember Good Morning Football, but there are going to be 5 episodes in a time capsule that capture the inner workings of not only one, but 2 teams from the strangest, most challenging training camp period in the history of maybe all of sports. You look back on it, the obstacles you guys overcame, but the obstacles that you had to even deal with to even put it on. What was the greatest challenge, and how did you guys go about finding a way to capture that and try to overcome it to put on a good television program?
First of all, you're right. And I have to add a little bit of cynicism here, and that, you know, the show just aired and it's already forgotten. And that's sort of our culture. And you have to get used to that when you work in television, when you work in news, when you work in sports. If you're looking to be famous or remembered or have people sing the praises of your work for more than a short time on Twitter, forget it. You know, it's long forgotten. You know, the next game, the next article, the next TV show is going to come around and what have you done for me lately? And a show like Hard Knocks is so immediate and is so driven by this just happened here look that by the next day, the news is old. That's why it could never air after the season. It could never air a week later. It has to air in real time. But I do think that as it grows in age, it'll become perhaps less and less relevant as the season goes on, less and less relevant maybe over a few years. But 20 years from now, these 5 episodes in particular, more than any 5 episodes we've produced in the history of this series, are going to be so historically significant because there hasn't been any coverage like this in the NFL inside any team, let alone 2 teams, like we were able to capture. So when a future young producer out there who's hopefully listening and writing this down, you know, does the 30 for 30 on the year that wasn't, you know, on the year that sports stopped, the 2020 madness that it was, they're going to come to NFL Films. Hopefully they're an NFL Films producer and look through this footage, and there's going to be tons of stuff that we didn't even get to use because, you know, we only have 5 hours. And it seems so normal for us that there was people walking around in masks and that there was social distancing and all that. And I think it's going to become very normal for us in the regular season. We're very adaptable as a species, I guess, but think about if a year ago you would have said Tom Brady is going to be on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but then he's going to throw, you know, his first touchdown of the year, and he's going to run over to the sidelines and slap hands with Bruce Arians, who's going to be wearing a mask. Wait, what? And he's going to not point up in the stands because no one's going to be in the stands. Wait, well, excuse me? There's going to be no one. Yeah. And then fake crowd music, crowd sound is going to be being pumped into the, wait, hold on. You wouldn't understand what this was. And I think it's very easy to forget that it seems normal now, but 20 years from now, just the visuals of what this year will look like in sports, whether it's the bubble in the NBA or the cardboard cutouts in seats in the MLB, or what football will look like and sound like this season, are going to seem like an alien landscape 20 years from now. And I'm really, really proud that Hard Knocks is going to be a key part of capturing that history.
Yeah, and look, there's great documentaries on Woodstock. There's The Last Waltz, which is a famous document, and it captures a moment in time and it puts you there. And I think 20 years from now, there will be stories about 2020, the year in sports, and your program is going to be the living document of what it was. And I'll go one step further. Like, I had not seen any footage of a coronavirus test being done at a facility. I had not seen any footage of a coach having a meeting on Zoom before your program. Like, there were a lot of firsts, a lot of breakthroughs. And the NFL and the Rams and the Chargers found a way to provide HBO and NFL films this access. I got to ask you, was there pushback? And how did you go about convincing all the different parties that this is important work and we need to do this for the sake of not only the fans, but for the franchise of Hard Knocks?
Well, it was simple. I told them one day Pete Schrager is going to compare our work to Martin Scorsese's The Last Waltz, and that will make my day. So please let us shoot this. No, there wasn't much pushback because it was a presentation really from NFL Films to the league football operations department and the players union in the midst of their negotiations about what training camp would look like. So they had a thousand things that they were in the middle of discussions about. And we sort of popped in one day and said, okay, I know you guys are busy.
Yeah.
We obviously need to talk about Hard Knocks. We know it's a big deal. It's a big deal for everyone at the league. It's a big deal for players. Players love it and obviously get a lot out of it. How are we going to do this? And we had to present how we plan to do it in a safe way. So we had to drop all of our numbers. You know, we usually have 40 people out on the field in what now would be considered tier one, which is, you know, being able to touch the players and shake hands with the players and talk with the players up close without masks. You know, our 40 staff members have unfettered access all day, every day. That dropped to 13 members at each camp in tier two, which means we can't go within 6 feet of them. And so there's 13 people now that are even allowed on the football field or in the facility, let alone 40 that could go up and touch the players and put microphones on. So now we're down to 13 people. And of course we went along with all the guidelines that the players were going to go on. So our crew that probably all landed this morning on red eyes and are dead asleep, you know, right now, they tested every day, just like the players did at training camp. And I'm happy to say that in Los Angeles, between both camps, none of our crew tested positive at all. And I think only one player between both teams tested positive the entire time. And so it was a dedicated effort for us to keep them safe. And it wasn't just because that was what it took to make a film or make this TV show. And it wasn't about, oh, well, I guess we have to do this in order to do our job. It was, well, I mean, we have to keep each other safe. We have to keep the players safe. We talked 100 times as a crew, as a production company, what would be the worst thing that happens? Well, it would probably be if the headlines were Jared Goff gets COVID from Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
You know, like that can't happen.
They're doing you a favor. They're doing you a favor letting you in the building. You can't come in there and infect the building.
It's the worst thing that could happen. So our crews had to not hang out with each other at night. They couldn't have beers together in a hotel room because if one person was infected, now four people are infected and that one person might be asymptomatic and go touch something that then Jared Goff touches. And we had to be really, it was a tough lifestyle for our crews out there. You know, so we were in the middle of it. And then in the middle of that, you throw the social justice aspect and everything that happened with the NFL surrounding that in show four. And, you know, it's just another example of NFL Films being right in the middle of history and not just being there to cover it, but being part of it and capturing something that historically is going to be really important long-term for the league and the players and the coaches personally to have there. And if we weren't there, I think the league and sports history in general would be worse off for not having the material that we captured.
There's this balance between the football stuff and the off the field stuff, which includes both the pandemic planning, and then of course this the episode four, which I said last week on the podcast might have been the most important Hard Knocks episode in the 15 years of the show. How do you balance that? Because on one end we're talking about Dante Dion's locker, and then on the other end we're talking about Terrell Lewis testing positive for coronavirus. And when you went into this thing, did you discuss, all right, we do still have to talk about Herbert and Tyrod, and if that's the case, are we becoming how a team deals in a pandemic show? Are we dealing with just the football, or how are we going to mesh the two? Because I think that's a great challenge that you guys did a very good job addressing, and I didn't feel at any point that we were being neglected on either end of it.
It's a great question, and the answer is that we try not to overthink it. We follow what is actually happening with the teams. The easiest way to screw up this show is to think that you are a brilliant storyteller and you're going to impose your storytelling upon what actually happened and interpret it in a way that isn't true and present it so that your story is told to the audience. So what we really do is look at everything that happened. We edit everything. We come up with, it's 2 or 3 hours worth of material, and we try to decide what is most representative / most entertaining and informative of the week that was. It's pretty obvious where the balance lies each week. In week one, half of the material we had was COVID related. And you see in the final show, half the show is COVID related.
Yeah.
Because that's just half the material we had. And it was like, well, we're not going to just get rid of COVID in 5 minutes and then say, oh yeah, they kind of got tested real quick and then they cared about football. Well, that wasn't the reality. The reality is half of their week, that first week, was where the hell are we? And what is this world where we're, you know, we don't even know where our lockers are because they've been moved. You know, the world was so different. And as time went on, more and more football seeped in episodes 2 and 3, became much more football oriented as we went. And in 4, boom, it goes back to a half and half show where half of the things that went on that week and half of the material we captured the second half of the week, boy, football didn't matter at all. And so what we did is follow what we had. We could have, and maybe other people who would make the show would say, well, let's shy away from this, or let's shy away from football, make it all about the social justice. And we talk about those things. Hey, maybe we should go 85% social justice, or maybe we should go 85% football. But when you talk about those things, the easiest thing to do, it's sort of advice, I guess, parents tell kids a lot. You don't have to worry about keeping your facts straight if you just tell the truth. If the truth is they spent the back half of the week, a full half of the week, talking about X, and they spent the first part of the week talking about Y, present it that way, and that's how it will come off, and it'll feel genuine. And then you saw in episode 5 that the first half of the week is sort of the last chance to prove yourself. And then really the second half of the week is about, we have to figure out who's on our roster and make decisions. And, you know, sort of a typical Hard Knocks show of figuring out the back end of the roster. And it's the end of the line and practice squad and figuring out those last few spots for the Rams and Chargers.
Closing with you, I guess, I look at this entire series, 5 episodes, 2 teams, pandemic, social justice conversations that are raw and unfiltered, and you guys captured it all. I'm not asking you to compare it to previous seasons because I know they're all your baby in different ways. Is this the one you're proudest of, though? I feel like this one was, it might not have had the same buzz online. You might not have had your Rex Ryan moments. It might not have been your Chad Ochocinco stuff. But gosh, is this a living document to what the time we're living in? And you guys captured it so well.
I can tell you this. There is no doubt that this is the one I'm the most proud of every single person that worked on the show
before.
There isn't even a close comparison. Because on the NFL film side, not one of us over the past 6 weeks has been in the same room with each other where we did this all, you know, remotely from different offices over screens. Because We just don't share offices at any time inside the NFL Films office. So the 100 or so people that work on this at NFL Films, we never saw each other, you know, so there's no pats on the back or handshakes or that social interaction. And that makes it tougher. And the people out in the field just live through, literally, I can tell you that if Steve Sable were here, he would say this 100%. The people out in the field for the Chargers and Rams Hard Knocks this year went through the most difficult assignment in NFL Films history.
Mm.
There's no way around it. It was, and I can't see anything in the future being tougher than 50 plus days on the road in the middle of a pandemic without being able to enjoy any of the social benefits. Family can't visit you. You can't go on a day off, you know, to a bar or a restaurant, or, I mean, you can't do anything. You can't go to a movie theater, can't go to a bookstore. I mean, they were trapped. The show itself, I think it'll be the most important show that will come out of the Hard Knocks catalog for quite some time. Gosh, the way the world goes, I hope it's the most important, right, and that we don't have anything bigger coming on.
I'd love to be focusing on a third wide receiver battle on the depth chart for 5 episodes.
That's what I was about to say, is that people might enjoy next year's show better, and I hope they do out of a sense of watching football again. And I hope they look back and say, wow, I'm glad we're not watching last year's show. And I'll join them in saying, I'm glad we're not watching that stuff that we watched last year with COVID testing and social justice and no preseason games, because I hope COVID is gone and I hope social justice has taken steps forward and we start to move forward as a country. And I hope that preseason games are back and the NFL is 100%. And I'll be very happy if this show is looked back upon as an anomaly and not as a high point.
Right on. Ken Rogers, congratulations on another amazing season, and thank you so much for taking the time when I know you'd much rather be lying on a couch and not thinking about this thing for 24 hours, but you did it right after you put it to bed, and we can't appreciate it more.
That's what I'm going to go do now.
Ken Rogers is right. This season wasn't about a wide receiver's room and who's going to make the squad or Aaron Donald's glutes or, I don't know, Joey Bosa's contract. It was about adapting to somehow prepare for a 2020 NFL season happening in the midst of a global pandemic. It was also about a summer of change, a summer of tragedy, and the open and raw conversations on social issues had in both facilities. We saw actual coronavirus testing going on when the footage wasn't seen anywhere else on sports television. We saw a scrimmage canceled so the players could use that platform to create change. We saw a season of Hard Knocks pulled off and executed without any actual or real football being played between two teams. No preseason games. And hey, SoFi Stadium, it looks incredible, and we saw a lot of it. Sean McVay seems like a great communicator. Anthony Lynn, a leader of men. But are any of these teams any good? I honestly have no idea after 5 episodes. But the fact that we got to see as much as we did inside the four walls of those buildings and in the spirit of Hard Knocks amidst what's going on in the world with such restrictions that those producers and filmmakers had, it's pretty incredible. Can't say this was the most fun season of Hard Knocks. It wasn't. But all things considered, may have been the best. That is it for episode 5 and a wrap on season 2 of the Hard Knocks podcast. Thank you to Hard Knocks showrunner Ken Rogers for joining us on the podcast today and recapping not only episode 5, but the season as a whole. This show was produced by HBO Sports and NFL Media. Make sure you check out the Hard Knocks Instagram page at Hard Knocks HBO for exclusive clips from the final week of training camp with the Los Angeles Rams and the Los Angeles Chargers. For more Hard Knocks content, head on over to NFL.com. NFL Network's Dan Hansus has recapped every episode of the series. And if you want to keep up with the Rams, the Chargers, and the rest of the league this year, make sure you subscribe right now to the Around the NFL and Move the Sticks podcasts on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find every episode of Hard Knocks Los Angeles over on HBO Max. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, HBO Max, or wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to leave us a rating and a review. I'm your host, Peter Schrager. To all the listeners, thank you for going on this Hard Knocks Los Angeles journey with me. We are treated to yet another fantastic season of the show thanks to the brilliant producers at HBO and NFL Films, and it was awesome to break it all down each week on the Hard Knocks podcast. I want to especially thank my producer, Emma Samaki, who was fantastic. We had a blast doing this for you guys all season long of Hard Knocks, and we hope that next year we can do it again. Thank you so much for listening. Hard Knocks, Los Angeles. Let's go.